Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
Here we are, the 22nd of January of 2019 already.
You got a little gurgle going on.
Yeah, I need to clear my throat. I got a frog in my throat.
The old frog in the throat. A little tea will help that. You like tea, right?
Yeah, I like tea.
What do you do? Do you do the, you know, the Lipton or you?
I just use tons of PG tips.
What is that?
That's the tea that tea drinkers drink.
PG tips.
Yeah, PG tips. It's England's number one tea.
It sounds like a cartoon character.
Yeah, it does. I'm PG Tips here.
That's what it sounds like. So PG Tips, what does it taste like? Is it like any of the herbals or is it does it have caffeine?
No. It's a black tea, but it's really it has a very kind of like, oh, I should be drinking this all the time flavor.
Oh, so it's an easy tea.
But with lots of flavor. It's not tasteless.
And do you have a bowl or do you use a bag?
It comes in these weird pyramid-shaped bags.
And then you use it only on one. This is the last question I have. You use it on one tea or you save it for a second?
It's not Chinese tea.
No, it's not like that. Okay, so you use it. Anyway, all right. Well, let's get on with some of the things that are going on. We're going to talk about the skinny on the markets tonight. This is the last week to enter cliffs close to the pin. We have some notes on CES and hopefully an update from you on the Consumer Electronics Show, some things that you saw. Netflix update and a government shutdown discussion entering day number 32.
I wonder how long. We should be taking bets. This should be the closer to the pin contest.
Yeah, that's right. We should have like an under or over.
Yeah.
So, well, let me tell you some things that are going on with the markets to start the show off to give us a little bit of insight into what's been going on. We had a great, reasonably good week last week on top of several good weeks into 2019 after a horrendous December. I think, you know, the S&P was down 13.5% for the final quarter of the year.
I didn't know it was that much.
Yep, 13.5% for the final quarter. And the rest of the world's still the same. You know, one of the other things I looked at recently, because we wrote a few reports, is that every major asset class was down in 2018.
Every
major asset class. So you look at things like, we take commodities as a basket. We look at bonds. We look at, real estate. We look at large cap, small cap, international, emerging markets. You know, you name it.
Precious metals.
Precious metals. I wonder what they were last year. I would think they were probably down. They came down. I got to look at where precious metals as a class was, but generally commodities were down. If you lump in oil into that with, you know, ags and precious metals and energy. So kind of interesting stat though. It's very rare that happens.
Yeah.
We had some excitement today again. You know, markets were closed yesterday in observance of Martin Luther King Day. And we had some excitement because there was some discussion over the weekend that President Trump was going to have a really big announcement on Saturday. It was going to be something. And it was like, oh, it's exciting. Of course, that was said right before the futures closed on Friday night. So the futures kind of ramped up into that. And then there was some additional excitement because there was some comments about from Mnuchin, who said that, hey, you know, we do see that there's going to be the potential for, or he'd like to see, or there is some possibility of the trade sanctions or the trade tariffs that would be ending. Of course, that was walked back by the White House afterwards.
Right.
And then we saw this kind of discussion and speech from President Trump about the shutdown, which the Dems shut down before the even offer came to the plate. So,
yes, without even hearing it.
Yeah, we're not doing it. That's it. Whatever he says, we're not doing. Even if they give us everything we want, we're not doing it. But actually, what he said was nothing incrementally different than what he said. He didn't offer anything up, even though he tried to put it in a different package, I guess is what he did. He tried to, you know, wrap it a little differently.
Old wine in new bottles.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Recycled milk back in the carton. Using tea bags for a second time kind of thing. So markets are up, you know, have been up pretty nicely this year. Overall, U.S. markets up about 5% year to date, you know, depending on which particular market you look at. So that's good. Markets, again, were closed on Monday, so nothing happened there. But there was a lot of consternation about this whole Brexit thing. Now, the latest is a possibility of a new referendum, which is what you guys said. I mean, you guys have talked about this.
Well, we predicted this 2 years ago.
As soon as they said it, you said they're going to do another vote.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if they're going to do that. That would be weak. Wouldn't that be weak?
What else are they going to do?
They just can't come to an agreement. You know, it's unfortunate that this reminds me of the popular vote versus the electoral college, where the popular vote says one thing, but yet the electoral college says something different. But, you know, supposedly the people that you put in office are supposed to follow along with what you said, you know, what your wishes are. And they're your, quote, representative. But that's not what's happening.
No.
So we see this. We see that the week also start out on basically a dour note. China GDP was the slowest since like 2008. Manufacturing in Europe area continues to slow. Housing numbers in the U.S. in terms of existing home sales disappointed significantly to the downside. As a matter of fact,
it kind of went too high.
It's still not recovered.
It depends on what area you're in. And believe me, it's more than recovered around here.
Yeah. No, there's definitely areas that have not only recovered, but went over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, I sold a house my house that I sold on the west side of town, when I sold it 2 years ago, it was significantly higher than the top level it ever was.
And now?
It's just hanging in. Hasn't really changed in value. I keep looking at it to make sure I didn't get screwed.
Jeez.
Every once in a while.
Taking your own advice.
Yeah, just every once in a while I'm looking, okay, what's happening? But it hasn't really changed in value since I sold it. A couple thousand here or there. But the December existing home sales numbers were, 4.99 million on an annualized basis. The consensus was at 5.25 million. So the key takeaway from the report is that it reflects a softening housing market and this general evidence that there's a deceleration in the median selling price growth because sales declines across all regions happened. And you saw that there was, and this is, you know, take notice, I think, when you're out there to all the for sale signs that are up and how long they're sitting on the market. It's definitely, especially in the higher end, there is much longer time from putting it to market to the sell date.
Yeah.
So that's showing something. And probably that has to do with the fact that interest rates are up. I mean, it costs but it costs a lot more to buy a house, the same price house. If you have a $500,000 house, $300,000, doesn't matter the number. And you go from a 3%, 3.5% mortgage to a 5.5%, that 2% is significantly more money. I mean, you're talking about upwards of, could be $300 a month, $400 a month.
Well, I think what people really just look at is not that number, but they just look at what their monthly is going to cost them.
Well, I just said that. I just said it's
going to if it is a couple hundred, but I think you can fudge that. You can probably bring it down to something that it would have been anyway, and they'd be happy with that.
But don't you think what they're going to do is look for a house that's more in their range or wait it out, and that's why pricing has softened a bit?
Way it works, it seems to me, because I've been watching this forever, they tend to wait it out.
Right. And isn't the price mechanism of a house, one of the price mechanisms is affordability. Don't housing prices adjust according to that affordability? Therefore, if in fact rates are higher, the affordability is lower for the same house, therefore prices have to come down.
Yeah, I'm not arguing this point.
Mm-hmm. All right, there you go. All right. So no argument.
What I'm arguing is that you can finagle the monthly payment using different mechanisms, and that would allow somebody to get a bigger house than they probably should be getting if they were being careful.
Right, because what they could do is they can extend the loan term.
And the balloons.
Right, you know, adjustable rates, those kind of things you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also some several key psychological and technical indicators that were flashing majorly overbought signals on Friday. Some levels I haven't seen in years. So we saw this major move down into, I would say, Christmas Eve, right after that.
Yeah.
And some of those indicators were flashing signals I hadn't seen in years either on the downside. So it was kind of, you know, like, hey, back up the truck at this point and let's get long. Let's not get shorter. Let's not be short. Let's not hedge out too much here. Be really careful. Stay long. Now what we're seeing is the opposite. Now, with these indicators, I've always said this, that when you have these indicators that are really down in the dumps, they're often bought more than the indicators that are topping out are sold. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, the nature of things, yeah, because people prefer to go long rather than short.
Right. So these indicators basically look at, you know, what is the buying patterns? You know, are people pushing up prices? What's happening with regard to some statistical measures, et cetera? So there's several of them that I use, plus some that we built. So I think it's saying that the markets need to take a breather. They use any excuse possible. So they go into today with the fact that China's GDP is slowing and there's issues in Europe and the Brexit thing is upside down. Government shutdown is costing about, what now, $5 billion up to this point. And then on top of it, you have these issues with regard to, you know, what's happening with these trade wars, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's starting to get a little bit grating. So, you know, when you have all this going together, I think we have what's called a cloudy outlook with a chance of another correction.
Well, yeah, I see that's your theme for today's show.
Yes, that is the theme. Taken from cloudy with a chance of meatballs.
Yeah, well, meatballs are less likely.
Yeah, much less likely. we did see U.S. manufacturing output increased by the most in 10 months in December, which I thought was really interesting, which was boosted by a surge in production of motor vehicles and a range of other goods. I don't know why, if we're seeing such significant production of motor vehicles, if these companies like Ford, GM, they just can't seem to get out of their own way. I mean, they came back a bit, but those charts are pretty ugly.
Yeah, I'm not getting it. I don't know what's going on. There's something's up.
Yeah, they just can't seem to get, whether it's, well, a lot of it could be affordability from the aspect of margins, whereas their margins are compressing due to the fact that they have higher costs for inputs due to the trade wars, due to the trade skirmish or kerfuffle, whatever your choice is.
Yeah.
So I think that could be something, input prices going up, and then they can't pass on those pricing increases to consumers. Interest rates being higher. Also, the same discussion we just had about housing goes to the cars, even though cars are a shorter term. Although these days you can get a 7-year and 8-year loan. I mean, back in the day, it was like 2 and 3 year. Now you can do it on a 7-year basis. Do you ever finance a car for like 7 years?
No, I wouldn't do that.
It's crazy, right?
In fact, more recently, all I do is buy a car with cash.
Yeah, it's a much better way. Much better way. Buy something that's like a year old.
Yeah, well, you can buy something even older, but well maintained. I mean, there are these people out there that baby their cars for years and years and years.
Yeah, then you can pick it up for a much better price than a new one.
Yeah.
Yep, and these things are built to last these days.
Yeah.
It's not like
I still have a 25-year-old car.
Do you?
Yeah, my Lexus, 1993 Lexus, almost 26 years old now.
Wow, how many miles on it?
About 150.
Wow, and it rides perfectly?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. The old days, you remember when you would buy an American car and pretty much within a year, everything was clanking?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're just falling apart.
You hear clanking and bumping and jiggling and all sorts of noises. Not so much anymore. But that really took me out of the American car market for many years. Now I drive a Ford. I have a Ford and a Mercedes. I love the Mercedes.
Well, I think the Ford. I think the Fords make a good car. I think the Fords. I think the Ford is a good car. I've was testing a few of them during my little era of trying to look at cars, and it seemed like a nice car. The Focus is a very nice car.
Yep. All right. Let's see what else we have here. Let's see. All right. Some updates on earnings. So earnings season, we know, started last week, and a lot of banks came out. And it looked like many of these banks, start with Citi, the same concept where these banks missed their numbers. They guided down to a degree. Revenues, maybe they made their numbers, but revenues were short or vice versa. And they really were not good reports. But what ended up happening was that I think that investors said, you know, we really beat these things down pretty well for a while. And I think that in the latest round, concerned about the yield curve no longer, well, not steepening at all, flattening out and compressing. And on top of that, everybody's bashing of the banks for the last year.
The banks were really taking a beating.
Taking a major beating. I think what happened was there was a bit of a relief saying, oh, man, it's not that bad. I mean, it's bad, but not that bad. So banks did really well. Goldman had one of the best days of its history.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's up like 10%. Crushed estimates. I don't even know how anybody, you know, if analysts on average are estimating $2.45 and they come out at $4.50, that's not even close.
No, that makes you wonder. That makes you wonder. Either they're getting bad guidance from the company, and I don't like the idea of a bank, which is really doing a lot of bean counting, being wrong like that, because it's like, dude, can they do any numbers that are correct? I mean, they're supposed to be the numbers people. I find it very disconcerting.
I think that Goldman usually has a widespread from what they report to what analysts are saying they estimate they're going to report. The other banks kind of beat by 30 cents, 20 cents, 10 cents, something like that, you know, or missed a little bit, nothing major, but they all did very well. Citigroup being probably the top in performance after their numbers, aside from this. We also saw that Alcoa came out, similar kind of situation. There was some questionable outlook and the stock was down on the news, but then the next day turned around and rode higher. Mm. Netflix, which was in the spotlight with us last week, if you recall, we talked about and asked the question, why are they increasing the cost, their monthly fee?
Right, we went into the math of it all.
Yeah, 2 days before, 3 days before their earnings. And we said, I think we both confirmed and both agreed with the fact that something's wrong. So you don't come out with that kind of news 2 or 3 days before unless you're going to miss significantly, right? That's what we said?
That's exactly what we said.
Yep,
and that actually was your thesis.
And that's what happened.
It was your thesis.
Yeah, they came out with earnings and kind of the subs were up and a few things were better. But one of the things we saw was the continuation of their cash burn, like $3 billion. Some metrics were disappointing, but the guidance on their earnings were cut by like 40%.
Yeah.
So I don't know how the company comes up with this number that they're going to increase their rate by like 18%, the subscription rate, the monthly cost, and still come in 40% lower on earnings.
Yeah.
Unless they're just, you know, sandbagging it somehow. But the stock is definitely down since that moment.
Well, let's put it this way. You nailed it.
I tried. Well, we did it for the game too, so it's in there. Now, oil continues to seem to have this weird bid. It got crushed, it came back, and it got crushed again, came back. Every time it gets towards that $50 range, $48 and $50, it pops. Now,
yeah, it does. It pops up to, it's usually around just under $55.
Right, exactly. That's the level of resistance at this point. So it turned lower today because there was these overbought concerns and some people saying that the production cuts that OPEC is talking about, Saudi Arabia is talking about, that maybe, you know, we've gotten a little ahead of ourselves because oil's up 28% in 2019 after cratering from 45% from its October high.
Yeah, it was over 75.
Yeah, and then it just came down because, I mean, we're not seeing the use. which aligned with economic slowdown, aligned with the fact there was too much production, too much surplus out there, and you know, started to run down pretty hard. And then, of course, as we've seen, you know, the thing that pisses me off is that if an individual or a company, for that matter, said the things that the Fed, the government, OPEC said just in an effort to raise prices, you'd go to jail.
This is true. It's like it's a scheme. It's a pump and dump.
It's a total pump and dump. That's exactly what it is. It's a pump and dump without any ramifications. How great is it to be a government?
Yeah, well.
Which is why.
Apparently not much you can do about it, because the people sending it to jail, the people were doing the pump and dump.
Well, which is exactly why the markets were down like 400 points today, and out marches Larry Kudlow at 3:30 p.m. to say, you know what? That story about the meeting being canceled with the trade talks with China, I don't know anything about that. That's not my understanding. I'm denying that's true. Markets shot up like probably 125, 130 points on that news in a second.
Yeah, just almost instantly.
And then they flowed back down. But nonetheless, this is the kind of thing you hear, you know, and this administration is a master at this.
Yeah, but let me remind you of something.
Go ahead. Yes.
You used to really condemn Obama for not doing exactly this.
I did?
Yeah. Doesn't Obama realize that when he says these things, the market collapses? He should be saying good things, shouldn't he?
Well, I think that either side of it is a problem.
No, you liked the idea of it going up. You were like you had a CNBC mentality.
When did I have a CNBC mentality? Well,
this was during the Obama administration. I remember very clearly you complaining about the same situation on the reverse, you know, on the converse way of looking at it.
I think that either way is a problem coming out, and specifically now, I don't know if Obama was trying to necessarily dump the market, but I think that these guys got to get their story straight and just kind of chill out a little bit and stop talking so much.
Well, this administration for sure.
And let's also confirm that I complain about everything.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so.
You do, but if you're going to complain about one thing and then you start complaining about the opposite, then I have to call you out.
So you, I need to complain with consistency.
Yes, consistent complaining.
Right, okay.
An even playing field, kind of a all boats floated kind
right,
of thing.
Right, gotcha. So, okay, all right. So I won't complain about this anymore. That's all. It's over.
I like hearing it. I'm just telling you. I was just reminding you.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I've complained about in the past is a long list, but this Davos economic confab, this gathering of the economic elite to talk about the markets around the world and how the blah, 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 blah. You know, and when the first time I recall this, I was really interested in it. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, you got the IMF there, you got the president of this country there, you got the economic leader from that country there, and you got all these different hedge fund guys there. And really kind of cool. They're all getting together. They're talking about how everybody's going to work together and do all this stuff and all that. And then it turned into this crazy elitist, globalized kind of grouping that, what's that group that people think rules the world?
The Bilderbergs.
Yeah, the Bilderbergs, right. So this is kind of like
it's a drinking club.
Right. It's like an open forum Bilderberg that they're openly telling us that they're trying their best to rule the financial world.
Yeah, the reason that everyone goes, I know people that go to this thing, they go there to skiing up in the Alps. It's dynamite.
Well, you can go anytime, but this is, I guess, a paid vacation from.
Yeah, you're getting paid. You're getting free. It's a free ski trip.
Right. So there was not much going on. Again, I thought this was really important in years past, as you know, but not so much anymore. But there was a couple of interesting comments that came out of the latest discussion. That was from the IMF, which cut its forecast for the world economy. Now, this is not what's interesting about this is not just a one-off here. This is their second cut in 3 months.
Mm.
So they said they're predicting that the growth of the global economy is going to be at the weakest level in 3 years. And also warning about the trade tensions will further, you know, cause further trouble. So they blamed softening demand across Europe and recent, this is what the quote was, palpitations in financial markets. Palpitations.
Yeah. Whatever that means.
Yeah. They're predicting 3.5% growth this year, which is lower than the 3.7 that they expect in October. And just to put this in perspective, a cut of just 0.2 may not seem like a lot, but it's like an 8% drop in what their expectations were in just a three-month period.
Yeah, which is a lot in that regard, yeah, for sure.
So they kept on talking about this whole item of, you know, policy issues, uncertainty related to trade, which I'm not going to disagree with. I think they're right. But I don't know when the rest of the gang is going to get an understanding that you can't necessarily, you know, enter a burning building and not get burnt. I don't care what kind of fireproof wear you have on. You know, basically, we started this fire of, you know, these trade war here, and basically we're maybe burning down China a little bit faster, but we're hurting ourselves as well. So there you go. So,
I don't know what you can do.
No, I can't do anything, but I can complain. I can bitch and moan. Did you you follow the story about the 14 or 16, depending on what news channel you're looking at, the 14 or 16 hour wait, the jailing of passengers on this United Airlines flight from Newark, New Jersey to Hong Kong?
I got a glimpse of it. I didn't really follow it too closely. You can brief me.
So essentially what happened was there was this flight that was going from Newark, New Jersey to Hong Kong. And at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the flight was diverted to Goose Bay Airport at the Canadian province of Newfoundland and Labrador due to a medical emergency. The plane landed there at 9:31, and medical personnel got on the plane and took care of the passenger and took him to the hospital. But as the flight was set to take off again, it experienced a mechanical issue. And that's all of a sudden why, they, for some reason, there was no way for them to get off. The runway was icy. There was this, you know, potentially if they got off, they can get hurt. And so they made everybody stay on the plane. They would not let them off.
Yeah, for like 14 hours
or something. Yeah, 14 hours.
Yeah, that would be bad.
14 hours. Can you imagine that? 14 hours. And then, you know, they're really pressing on the issue. The news is and media on, oh, the food supply was running out.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone's going to starve to death in that short of time period. Right. But you can get pretty stir crazy in a plane after 14 hours when it's not moving. You're not going anywhere. You're just stuck in a box.
I'd be out of my mind. Out of my mind.
Yeah. Well, you would, yeah.
I mean, really. I don't know what I'd be doing. I'd be going for that emergency door lever.
I was stuck in a tarmac for 4 hours once. And that was pretty bad.
The only thing you could do is try to drink yourself into a just absolute.
They probably don't have that much booze on the plane.
Bad. But I mean, what I don't understand is, you know, the United Airlines apologized, probably refunded the price of their tickets. It just seems to me that airlines have this ability to just let this stuff just, you know, oh, sorry about that. You know, and they just treat people really poorly.
Well, you'd think with the plane stuck out there. Now, it was stuck out there, but they have these little towing things that pull planes all over the place. They could have pulled the plane to one of the gates. There's got to be some gate. It was like a snowed, unless all the gates were full with planes that were snowed in. But even so, you could pull it somewhere.
I wonder if it had had to do with immigration issues.
Oh, no, it always does. It always does. It always, you can't, you know, when you're, this happened to me once. I'm flying from, it was in China. I was going through Japan and we got on this airline that there was a delayed or something. There's something wrong at the Japanese airport and we had gone past curfew.
Oh.
And they said, we're stuck here and you can't leave the plane because we weren't, you know, checked in Japan and they didn't have any way of processing us. So we had to stay from midnight till 7 at the gate in the plane.
Oh.
But no, All of a sudden, just quietly, the plane pulled out about a half hour later and took off. Hell with curfew. They paid a fine.
Yeah, that's all. It's better than keeping everybody cooped up on a plane.
Oh, yeah. People start wrecking the place. So this other situation, I'm sure, is very similar. They could have found some way of either putting the people in some quarantine inside. It's doable.
Mm-hmm.
Just bring a couple of cops in there to shoot anyone who leaves the quarantined area. I mean, there's ways of doing this. They just didn't do them.
Yeah.
That is incompetence.
Yep. Terrible. I don't know what the longest wait time is. Maybe somebody can look this up for us. But the longest wait time of anybody on the tarmac, wasn't there something like 20-something hours a couple of years back?
I can't believe any of these wait times. I mean, I can understand the one I was stuck in when I was stuck in a plane for 4 hours because there was a windstorm. It was a Russian plane. It was Aeroflot, and there was just, you know, it was not, I was going to just be stuck there. The plane couldn't take off because of the wind, and they were trying to get these planes off the ground. I've never heard of such a thing where a plane can't take off because of the wind, but I guess it was a crosswind.
Oh, yeah, that could be a problem. You get those crosswinds, and you get that dip on takeoff. You just turn the plane on a different runway and go in the direction of the wind.
Generally,
I mean, just unless the wind was,
and this was
somehow,
at Heathrow, I'm sure they had the right runway they could have used.
It's not like wind is coming out of every single direction at every single moment.
No,
there's a window. All right, okay. Here we go. We're on the listen. I mentioned this last week, and I'll mention again that, you know, this show is all about, well, having some fun, education. It's all about, you know, providing some good insights into markets and finance and investments and news, things that I don't think you hear every day, every place.
Yeah, it gives people perspective.
Right. So what we do is we say, listen, you know what? If you get something out of this, which I know you are, please donate to the show. Very easy to do. Just go over to DH Unplugged, click on the donate button. And, you know, you can give whatever it is. You want to do a monthly thing where you're giving $10 a month. You want to give, you know, a one-time, you know, $200, whatever it is. Very helpful to us because we buy things like we got a trophy. I'll show you a picture of that. I have a picture of the and sent out the trophy to the winner of the Close to the Pin just today. And we have T-shirts and we have servers and we have, you know, just time in doing this. And we have developers and some help us for free, but some charge us. A lot of things that go on here. So it's really important that I know that you're getting something out of this. And you know what? It's time to pay the piper. I mean,
it's time to help us out.
Yeah, you're paying $14 a month for Netflix. Okay, you're watching it here and there, whatever. You're paying money for all sorts of entertainment. You know, you go to the get something to eat, it costs you $25 for two people. So anyway, go over and donate to your heart's content.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of listeners that need to help us.
Mm-hmm. I'll mention close to the pin that I thought it was ending last Friday, but there's still time to get your guess in for Cleveland Cliffs, symbol CLF, for the close to the pin. This is the first one of the year. Don't forget that each year, all the winners will get a T-shirt, of course, a one-of-a-kind T-shirt, DH Unplugged T-shirt, but also you get entry into the end-of-the-year tournament competition where you can win a wonderful, first of all, be crowned winner for the year. And then on top of that, because it's tough enough to come in once.
Top stock picker.
Yes, stock pop picker. Top stock picker. That's a bit of a tongue twister. No?
Yes, I had trouble with it.
So if you're down on the show notes right here, and by the way, you'll get the show notes over on DH Unplugged, this show number 440. We have some charts, we have some things, we have some things to click on. We have all sorts of little gadgetry going on here. But if you go on, you see that little area for the close to the pin? See the little button there, CTP Cup 2018? How you like that? How you like that?
Yeah, nice.
Huh? It's big too. It's like, I don't know, it's about 24 inches tall.
4 feet. How much?
About 24 inches tall.
Oh, well, that's 2 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, let me see about... Yeah.
I'd be happy. I think it'd be something you want on your mantle.
Yeah. DH Unplugged CTP Cup winner, close to the pin cup winner, 2018 champion, Marcus Galliford. So we'll be sending that out to you today. Make sure to check your mail. That's been sent. What else we got here?
Tesla.
Oh, yeah. Where's Tesla? We got to talk about Tesla. Where is that on here?
It's right there.
Ah, there it is. So you could take this.
Yeah, Tesla on Friday said it'll cut. This was a big deal because we had a lot of people on Twitter bitching and moaning because they got cut. People came out from the Midwest to go work for Tesla. And now they're going to kill these people with a workforce cut of 7%. It's a good way. And here's the joke of it. They're ramping up the Model 3 sedan. When generally speaking, when you ramp up, don't you need more people?
It would seem that way. Or this is a nod to the reality of them ramping up production previously for that 5,000 per week just to make that mark. And Elon Musk has thrown all sorts of money at it with those tents and all the things they did. And the reality that they didn't need that many people, it was just a short-lived phenomena.
It's a possibility. This just says to me bad planning. Yeah. It says higher volume and manufacturing design improvements are crucial for the Tesla to achieve the economics of scale required to manufacture the standard range, 220 miles, which is not much. Standard interior, which means this is what we used to call this when I was a kid. It was the stripped down model. My dad used to call it. Oh, yeah, it's a stripped down Chevy. Stripped down. It's got a big, it's got the big six. It's got a six cylinder and a cloth interior.
No stripped. AC. No AC.
And no AC. Well, none of them had AC.
AM only.
No AC and a stick shift on the column of the steering wheel.
Did you ever drive one of those, the stick on the column?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I can still do it right now. I can.
Oh, yeah, you're shifting up and down yeah. The stick shift yep. On the column. Yeah. Anyway.
So here's the thing. Let's parse through this for a second, okay? So they cut the workforce by 7%. As you mentioned, they're ramping up production. So we're cutting the ability to produce while we're ramping it up.
Yeah.
And they said, with quotes, higher volume and manufacturing design improvements are crucial to achieve the economies of scale required to manufacture this car.
Yeah.
So you need to higher volume with less people and manufacture design improvements, which I guess would mean robotics maybe or some kind of cutting corners maybe, I guess.
Cutting corners, there's the key word.
Less rivets, maybe one less screw per car.
Less glue. They really glue those. They're mostly glued together, those cars.
So to keep it at $35,000 and still be a viable company, in other words, we need to cut because the price is down. Our margins are less on this. And we're going to work the crap out of the people that are there, beat them to death with working.
So you can buy a stripped down version of the Model 3 for $35,000, which is a good deal if the car doesn't, if the car holds up. Except for the 220. I don't like that. The 220.
The good news is that you nailed it because you used that for the game a couple weeks back, or maybe a week back. You have Tesla on their short.
Yeah, I did.
There you go. All right, some crazy stories I thought we'd talk about here. I thought this was fascinating. So there's a province in northern China. The province developed an app to tell users when and whether they are within a 500-meter radius of someone in debt. It's called a map of deadbeat debtors. There was a state-run newspaper reported. It hopes to get citizens to monitor the so-called debtors and report them to authorities if they seem capable of paying their debts. So I guess what happens is you have this is weird. So I guess I'm standing next to a debtor and he's buying a beer. I'm reporting him. So I guess they have some kind of reporting. How creepy is this?
Well, what do you expect? I mean, at some point, totalitarian communist governments have creepy things going on. But Dave, Chinese have been experimenting with this idea of having people with social scores, which is like having your FICO score tattooed on your forehead. And you get judged by that to the point where if you're really a bad person, not just debt, but you've been a petty thief and all these other things perhaps, or you're not pulling your weight, you can't even get on a train.
So you're talking about a scarlet tattoo.
You can't get on the subway.
But what happens if you get better? You can't. How do you undo the tattoo?
Well, it's not a tattoo. That's the point. But it's a kind of a virtual tattoo with these – with in this case with some, I don't know how they make you, do they make you carry around a smartphone or they put a, do they chip you, which I believe would be the way to go with this. You chip everybody with one of those little chips that goes under the skin. And so when you're walking around, you're giving off, you know, through an induction circuit, you're beeping out, you know, I'm a debtor.
Oh, this sounds awful.
It sounds like the Black Mirror kind of a story.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it also reminds me of like the futuristic stuff, you know, when somebody has certain credits left on their card, you know, and it can be taken away because of, let's say you're in a car accident or you're, you know, like you said, you're gambling or you were drunk driving or whatever it is, like you're saying, you know, a social credit system, a social. But I mean, the thing that's really troubling is that you have all, if people are rewarded for turning you in, it just seems like it could be a just catastrophe in the making.
Yeah, because you'd be turning everybody in.
Isn't this like the, isn't this just as, or maybe worse, but as bad as the ranking system in companies where they're
stack ranking
where they're just basically blowing out somebody.
We gotta get somebody. What are we gonna do? That guy, we don't like him. Okay, well, let's all give him a load number and he will be done with him and he'll be gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly the situation here. But that they have.
This is some new company, by the way. I was reading about this. There's one of these, I think it's, I don't know if it's Netflix or Roku or, I don't know which company it is. I got to go back and make better notes. But they have, they're using stack ranking. And I'm noticing that maybe it's Tesla, but they're using this technique. And the company is just starting to fall apart. So stack ranking does not work. Sorry?
I think it was Facebook.
Oh, Facebook, right. Facebook's using stack ranking.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that'd be something that Sheryl would have brought in to play and convinced everyone it's a great idea.
I mean, the problem
it's
is
it's the worst idea in the world. It really, terrible. Yeah, it just strips the talent out of your company.
And the morale.
Yeah, and the morale. And it's a lazy way to do it because it means you have no management skills. You don't know how to manage people, so you let them just kill each other.
Do you remember the day back when you would get your annual or quarterly or semi-annual, it was time, do your semi-annual employee review. Remember those days?
Yeah.
And back in those days, who did the review?
Your director, your boss.
Right, your boss. Today, people are responsible to do their own reviews.
Or you're reviewed by your peers.
I don't get it. I just don't understand it. Isn't the whole point of management, it's someone who manages?
Yeah, it seems so.
Now it's like everybody, the whole world has turned into a giant 401k where you're responsible for everything for yourself.
Yeah.
And I can't even imagine putting in a review of myself somewhere. Because I don't know would you be harsher on yourself? It'd be easy.
I don't know. I just refuse to do it. I wouldn't work for a company like that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't work for a stack ranking company.
Is there somehow you would, I guess you'd have to know that before you got into it and somehow have an understanding.
You can find out pretty quickly and then you can go find something else to do.
Very quickly. Transgender items are on the menu again. The Supreme Court on Tuesday revived the Trump administration's policy of barring most transgender people from serving in the military. So in a brief unsigned order, so I don't know why it's unsigned, but the justices temporarily allowed the ban to go into effect while cases challenging it move forward. So I guess it's I don't know what happens if people are, I guess if you're serving currently and you're transgender, I don't understand. Women can serve, men can serve, but transgender can't. Or is it that they have certain jobs? Or, I mean, what if you're...
Well, the only rationale I've seen that kind of makes sense is that it is they can't be accommodated because they're neither men nor women unless they fully identify. And then even if they can be accommodated, they have medical bills, supposedly. I don't know whether this is true. That are above and beyond what just a generalized man or a generalized female would have because they have all these hormones they got to take and some of it's expensive. and they don't think the military should be responsible for that sort of thing.
So transgender is not good. What about a man who is a man who's still is a man, but identifies as a female without any gender change?
There's a bunch of those. Well, that is typically somebody who's got some other issues, it seems to me. I don't know what the point of it is, to be honest about it. No one's ever explained it to me. Someone can explain it to me. What's the point?
Well, and if you watch
it's
MASH.
Like, it's like that woman that kept Donal or whatever her name is, that was the black, the white girl that identified as a black girl.
And
she made her face up and got an afro, and she looks black and she acts black. Okay, well, she's black then, I guess.
What was the guy's name? What was the guy's name from MASH? It was Jamie Farr.
Yeah. Remember? Yeah. He was a transgender character in the story, but he was transgender trying to get kicked out of the army. And it never
worked. Section something. Section 8.
Yeah.
The whole point was a Section 8.
Yeah. So he was always dressed up in a dress.
Right.
Yeah, that was a very funny bit. And nowadays, that'd be offensive.
Not only would it be offensive, he would have got the Section 8. He's not allowed in. So he'd be great. Right now. A little too soon. The bag is bagged. Oh, this is about the Facebook face bag. U.S. regulators have met to discuss imposing a fine against Facebook for violating a legally binding agreement with the government to protect privacy of personal data. This is according to the Washington Post. The Federal Trade Commission, or the FTC, has been investigating Facebook since last year. It has not finalized its findings in the probe, and they don't know the total penalty, but it's supposedly going to be big. Now, I don't know what big is. Is it 50 million? Is it a billion? I mean, I don't know what the number is. I have no idea. But I guess this whole issue of their privacy thing, it just keeps on leaking out that they held back information about what was really being allowed to escape. They knew about that whole deal with this is a major technology company. If they didn't know what was able to be released through the apps, through the quizzes, through the whole.
I know.
It's crap. All right, let's talk about CES. Anything that you heard, got? I heard you were on Twitter, I heard.
Yeah, I was on Twitter end of last year.
Well, what's how did that go?
It was okay.
How come?
What do you mean?
I thought you were banned.
I was. They decided not to ban me.
Did you go to the studio?
Yeah, that's what I really wanted to see. I wanted to see their new studio.
How is it?
It's smaller but more spectacular. It's actually quite. I should have brought my camera. Next time I go, which probably won't be for some time, but I will definitely take photos.
The last one is still in Petaluma.
Yeah, but they moved out of
the house.
They're in there. No, this is the third place. They started in a cottage, then they moved to this big giant brick house. They called it. That was a huge studio, and it's very elaborate. And then they moved into an industrial park, and they shrunk the studios, but they put in a lot of really modern stuff. It's very, very. It's almost like a small, real TV station, you know, that you'd find in some podunk place in Kansas.
Wow. And Leo's still doing a lot of the stuff by himself, switching cameras, doing all the stuff with all the equipment he has in front of him as the show goes on. Or does he have people doing that now?
No, he has engineers.
Interesting.
It's funny. When's the last time you saw this show? Ten years ago.
Obviously a while.
Yeah.
If he invites me back, I'll watch it.
Yeah, he's irked because you gave him good stock advice and he refused to follow it.
That's correct. He followed some of it.
Yeah, and then he stopped and that was the end.
Yep.
And he blames you. It's your fault.
You think so? let's see here. CES. So there's plenty of AI going on. I heard the winner from some people I know in the industry. As a matter of fact, a guy I had on the podcast last week, he said that the clear winner, what he saw was it was Amazon. Because every one of these devices that was being touted for the smart home all ran on Alexa.
Yeah.
Just all over the place. Crazy stuff running on Alexa.
Yeah. Well, I see all that sort of thing as a who needs it, especially automated home stuff. It's okay. Like, who needs it? I mean, I can throw a switch. I can get up and push the button and turn the lights off or on. It's not that big of a deal.
It's nice when you're sitting there watching TV and you're a little bit warm to touch a button and drop your air conditioning down.
Yeah, great. Anyway, I guess maybe in Florida, we have natural air conditioning in California, so I don't worry about it. Okay. 5G was talked up a lot, which is, I think, is going to be a fiasco. Mm-hmm. And I think all the people that are investing heavily in it are going to have some issues because I don't think the public's going to like to have a high-powered transmitter instead of in the big cell towers like we have now where you drive by them and you go, oh, my God, what an eyesore. Or some of them are shaped like palm trees, which are actually funnier and worse looking. I don't know if you've seen those.
Yep.
But this is going to be like your little transmitter on every telephone pole. And if there's too much room between the poles, they'll put another one in between. So you're going to be look out your window. There's going to be you'll be able to see at least two or three of these things, and they'll be beaming millimeter waves right into your house. It's disconcerting.
Has there been any studies on, and it often is this, studies on the potential impact of cancer or some other kind of?
Yeah, there's been plenty of studies. Most of them have been suppressed, but there's plenty of studies. If you want to do research, you can still find most of them. And it's like none of this stuff is healthy.
So
that includes your Wi-Fi, which is what I think the big concern is that once they start digging into this, they're going to discover that Wi-Fi is not the best thing in the world for you.
But once they do this, you don't need the Wi-Fi.
No, that's what they say.
I mean, cable is done.
That's what they would like you to believe.
Well, how fast is this?
What?
How fast is 5G?
Oh, I don't know, 5-6 gigabits per second, twice as fast as anything you can get, on the gigabit Ethernet is slow by comparison. It's bull crap. This doesn't work, this stuff. It's like nonsense. This is one of the worst fiascos I've witnessed. I haven't really dug into it as much as I could. We want to put up a website maybe. But these guys are this is like a Ponzi scheme.
The thing is that all these different things are being constructed with this in mind, that you're going to have this ubiquitous Wi-Fi connection at all times.
Yeah, high speeds.
Right, high speeds, all there. No, and everything can run on this.
Yeah.
So there's all this money being poured in, not only into 5G, but not only in the chips and all that, but it's also into all these things that will run on it.
Yeah.
What else do we see here? The LG TV. Okay. Just a quick segue here. Did you see the moon through the lunar eclipse?
No, we had overcast.
Oh, we had overcast. Yeah. Yeah. It was
my wife. My wife was up in Washington and she said she saw it.
Yeah. I saw it. It's pretty cool. I mean, you could have watched it live on YouTube. It turned red. It was great.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people in some countries were freaking out and just going nuts.
Oh yeah.
I think it was the end of the world.
They have a voodoo ceremony.
Right, end of the world. I thought this was really cool. We've got two more quick stories. Frontier Airlines has now instituted a policy allowing flight attendants to get tips.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
That's a good one.
Yeah. It's terrible.
That's terrible.
And they're supposedly not allowed to take cash on planes either anymore. You have to use a credit card.
Yeah, that's because people, were stealing.
Mm. Well, let's see what happens with this.
Everybody I ever knew who was a stewardess, they always stole a lot of those little booze bottles.
Well, of course, wouldn't you?
Ooh.
Of course. Take a couple of those, stick them in your pocket. Brexit update, part 6,705,000,000,000. So just to close up this segment on the Brexit issue, any thought that there will be any resolution, or is it just absolutely going to go to either a hard Brexit, hard break, or is it going to be a referendum?
Well, I would love it to go to a hard break. I think that would be good for everybody.
It would be good. It would be good. It would be pretty disastrous for, I think, everybody trying to, I mean, they only had two full freaking years to get ready.
Yeah. Well, there's that. That's true.
There'll be some downside. Don't you think?
Well, I think it'd just be a shakeout. It's like you have to figure out how you made a living. I mean, they're talking about how they're going to starve to death. I mean, some of these articles I've read, about these the people that are the remainers. They want to stay. They said, we're all going to die. You know, we're all going to die. We're not going to get any food because the food comes in from Europe, and we're not going to get. And I'm reminded of the potato famine. You know, from the Irish potato famine. What was that in the 1800s or early 1900s? And it was like, hey, you know, you can go fishing. You got fishing boats. You can, you know, you can, you got stuff. You're not going to starve to death.
But this is more like the Y2K of this time period.
Oh, it's totally the Y2K. It's
totally the Y2K.
And yeah, which also triggered a downturn in the markets, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Everybody was so busy getting that last zero on, that extra digit on their year. I still can't believe that Microsoft and these guys didn't think about that when they were building all these systems.
Well, actually, most of the Y2K issues, if I'm not mistaken, were really more of a problem with legacy systems, the big mainframes. And that's and the ones that ran the banks at the time, the 1999 bank. And so they were the ones that were going to fail and were all going to die. And I don't think the Microsoft products had much to do with that particular problem.
I never heard after that because we were all in a tizzy about it. I never heard of one person that computer didn't turn on the day after.
No, of course not. It works.
Not one. It's crazy. All right, let's get to the discussion of our game that we play, the Weekly Stock Picks. It's simply a game we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. As a matter of fact, nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. And if you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of loss of principal. And you should seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation, because we assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we will disclose that on the website under the Weekly Stock Picks section over at DH Unplugged. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see the names we discussed in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as additional important disclosures. Thank you.
Very good. Well, it looks like our older picks are still in the red, and our newer picks are all in the green, and they're way up in the green, except for mine, which is up, but it's not way up. And we're talking about Tesla. My short is up 10%. PG&E, I think this is yours.
Yep.
It got bounced, though. It's too bad. And then a Netflix short, which I believe was yours or mine. I can't remember.
That's mine. Well, yours says JCT. You're gray, and it says JCD pick next to it.
Oh, okay. Because I thought I shorted Netflix too. But I probably did in the past. No, I shorted Apple and Tesla as a duo. That's right. I left Netflix makes it the triple crown. Shorts.
Right. Exactly.
I had the I'm up just a nickel, so I'm dead money with Medtronic, and you got a new pick.
Mm-hmm.
Tempur Sealy International got bounced.
I can't believe that. Well, the market did rally pretty well. That's probably ripe for
way up.
I gotta look what that is. It's probably ripe for the short in real life here.
Yeah, you should maybe think about it. So this now you got a new one. This you're gonna short. We got a lot of shorts on this list, which is kind of cool. You're going to short Starbucks.
Yeah, I think they're coming out with earnings later this week. The concern about China's slowdown. Stock has been peaking out pretty well recently, held up very well through that downturn, started picking up again towards the all-time high. I just, you know, the last few announcements they had and their earnings reports just had some little bit of gloom in there. And now with this whole issue of the potential for Chinese, which is getting to be a big part of their income, looking to possibly scale back as a retaliatory measure against U.S., you may see some issue there.
I subscribe to this thesis of yours. I'm all in.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm going to pick one along. I'm going to go long on Valvoline.
Valvoline? What's that symbol? I don't even know that symbol.
VVV.
Triple V.
Now, the CEO is buying some stock. He's not buying a bunch. He's just buying some pin money with $500,000 worth. But he's also involved with Ashland Industries, which I would assume is Ashland Oil and some of the other properties. I'm buying it. You could say CEO insider, but I'm buying it because I'm sniffing a merger.
Sniffing a merger. Oh.
Yeah, sniffing a smell. I smell a merger.
It smells better. Smell a sniffing a
merger. Yeah, I smell a merger.
All right, let's put JCD pick here. That will be on the list tomorrow. Go over to DH and plug and check all these out. All right, I got that. All right, okay. Any closing remarks?
No, I think that's pretty much covers the bases.
I think we got a plug, of course, the No Agenda Show, which is Thursdays.
Yes,
No Agenda. And Sundays, 12 p.m. live.
Thursday, yeah.
Thursday, yep, 12 p.m. Eastern time. Disciplined Investor podcast. Also had Frank Curzio on last week. Had a whole discussion about the week before about hedging. And we have a behavioral psychologist coming on shortly.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yep. So lots to talk about. All right. I will see you again next week.
All right. See you then. Right. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.